Good morning, Mark Chappell. I have to admit, I'm a trial lawyer, but I'm a little nervous this morning. Not really sure why, but it's good to be home. I'll say that. Mark Chappell's the place where my wife, Latoya, and I used to venture over a decade ago. And we used to come with my younger brother, Reggie, and we came for spiritual nourishment with a little bit of an academic and literary twist. It wasn't Howard Thurman, who I understood used to have dancers here, but it was good nevertheless. When I grew up in New York, my grandmother and mother, mothers in the audience, we went to church in Harlem religiously. And I mean all day. Couldn't quite understand it as a kid, but it was wonderful. People would testify, people would sing all night, and if there was someone coming up probably from South Carolina, then it would really be a long night. But it was wonderful. And somehow in college and in law school, I lost that connection. But my younger brother one day said, "Hey Chris, I think there's a church you should listen to online on WBUR." And it was Marsh Chapel. And we started listening. We listened when I lived in Cambridge. And eventually we came across to Charles, and we came to Marsh, and we became members. And the rest, in many ways, is history. But Marsh is also special because my three kids, who are no longer they're now teenagers, they're no longer little ones, they were all baptized here. And they started their love of God and their connection to God here. And because of that, it's really special to me. We still go to church every Monday. They may not want to go. They're probably like I was in Harlem with my mother, but we still go. And it all started here at Marsh. And I remember Dean Hill with the toddlers running around his room, and we tried to plan it. And he just said, as we tried to plan it every week, and there was a snowstorm, it seemed like every weekend, and Dean Hill finally said, in the contemplative voice. So the contemplative voice is not just for servants. He said, "Ah, Chris, I think we should plant it in the spring." And we did. I'm sorry with the long preamble, but I just wanted to say Marsh really means a lot to me, and it means a lot to my family. And I thank Dean Hill, and I thank his wife, Jan, and I thank everyone here. It's really good to be home. So with that preamble, we're here today to celebrate two African-American spiritual giants of the 20th century, Dr. Martin Luther King, and also his mentor, the former dean of this chapel, Howard Thurman, who was, by the way, the first African-American to be in charge of an interracial church. And it was here at Boston University. He was also in San Francisco. I include Howard Thurman because he was basically the spiritual backbone of the civil rights movement, and provided Dr. King and many others with the philosophy we all know, the philosophy of love and of colorblindness and of also nonviolence. And indeed, it is said that Dr. King carried a copy of Thurman's Jesus and the Disinherited with him at all times. With Thurman's spiritual foundation and influence, Dr. King went on to change the world. Indeed, that's why we're here today. But he changed the world not with hate. He changed the world with love, by preaching love and forgiveness and the power of reconciliation, because Dr. King always knew that the arc of the moral universe always bends towards justice. And by any objective measure, if you look all around us, things have changed since Dr. King gave that "I Have a Dream" speech on that sweltering day in August in 1963. And just an aside, I learned by getting ready for this sermon that those famous words that Dr. King said, that "I just want my daughter to be judged by the content of her character," it was actually ad-libbed. Apparently, his good friend Mahalia Jackson called out and said, "Tell him about your dream, Dr. King," and he did it. And I think that that's really incredible. But fast forward 60 years later, and we now have seen so much of the dream realized. We've had an African-American president. We currently have an African-American vice president. We have two justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. We have two African-American senators in the South. This is bipartisan. We have a Republican. We have a Democrat down in the South. And just a few years ago, which is truly amazing, in Georgia, in a special election, two people won the election, a Jewish person and also an African-American. And I would say, considering what happened in Mississippi 50 years ago with the college students going down there and being murdered, I would certainly say Dr. King was right. That arc of the moral universe certainly bends towards justice. And if we go down to DC, Dr. King has a monument, which is wonderful. And where's that monument before? It's between Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln, two architects of this republic. Thomas Jefferson, the original architect, didn't quite get it right. And Lincoln tried to get it right, took a little while, took about 50 years to get it right, but he absolutely tried. And that's where Martin Luther King is. And just think about that. 60 years ago, when Howard Thurman was here, being the first person with the interracial group of folks at Wash Chapel, think about how far we've come. But it is Martin Luther King's weekend, and he still had business finished, or he had business to finish before he passed away. And there's been a lot of great change, but there's still more work to be done. The struggle of the poor is real. There's still too many members of our society that are disconnected and invisible. Those Howard Thurman referred to as the disinherited ones. This continues, unfortunately. There are still too many places in America where whole communities are left behind, and too many places where your zip code dictates your path in life, whether you're black or whether you're white. And many would argue that there's a school-to-prison pipeline where too many in our society, particularly poor and the youth, languish in jail. I'll tell you a story about that. I've done a lot of community service in my life, and I've done a lot of community service with folks that are reformed and had gone to prison. And there was this one person that I worked with, and he was great. He was from the inner city. I'm from the inner city. And I just, one day it was quiet, and I just said, you know, you're so great. You work hard. Like, what happened to you? Why did you end up going to prison so much? And he simply said, no one really cared about me. No one cared, Chris. Maybe if I had people in my life that cared, maybe it would have turned out differently. And that has always stuck with me. And there are too many in our society that are just like this. They have their dream deferred, to quote Langston Hughes. And I would say, unfortunately, the pandemic exacerbated this. There are more folks that are facing isolation, more folks facing depression, and more folks that are disconnected, unfortunately. And the first and the foremost trauma of the pandemic was something that my grandmother would say to me, you know, tomorrow's not promised. And I think we all felt that. And we all felt the brunt of that and the fear of that. And so I would say the pandemic gave us the triple threat of what Howard Thurman would call fear and deception and hate that we face. And with life slowed down, we could all take note of our own estrangement and our own alienation. So on this Martin Luther King Day in 2023, I challenge everyone here, including myself, let us try and reconnect with each other. Let us try and reconnect with those that are lost. Maybe a homeless person, maybe someone that we know has been struggling. Let's try and reach out and help them. Maybe volunteer at a shelter. Maybe volunteer at a soup kitchen. Maybe spend some time reading with some students that are left behind. Let's try and reconnect, because that's what life's about. And to quote my favorite utilitarian philosopher, because I want to quote him, he may not be necessarily relevant, but I want to quote him, and it's John Stuart Mill. And he would say, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men and women to do nothing. And John Stuart Mill was right. And I think we all need to use our Bible and what we learn every day here as Christians to try and connect with each other. And we can do that by using the most powerful weapon, love. Depending on what version of the Bible you have, love is mentioned between 351 and 650 times. But what does love look like? Well, Jesus tells us multiple times in the gospel what it looks like, but the story that stands out best is one we all know, and it's the story of the Good Samaritan. And of course, Jesus told the story because a lawyer asked him, well, we're supposed to love our neighbors, and I can see the lawyer now because I'm a judge. Well, what does neighbors look like? What is it? What is it? And Jesus said, okay, I'm going to tell you this story. And in the story, it's about someone helping someone. And it's not who you would have thought would have helped someone. When this man was beaten and left on the side of the road, a bunch of people passed him by. A rabbi passed him by, kept on walking. And another gentleman who worked with a rabbi passed by and didn't do anything. But who helped? It was the Samaritan. And that's what Jesus was trying to tell us. We should help each other. It's that connection. But maybe there's some lawyers types in this audience would say, yeah, Mr. Edwards, Chris, that's a story in the Bible. So here's a story of a Samaritan that is real and that is connected to this chapel. More than a century ago, an African-American seventh grader from segregated Daytona, Florida, prepared to board a train to Jacksonville and go to high school. His grandmother was actually a slave. This man was Howard Thurman. And his family was so happy that he was going to go to high school that they saved and scrounged all their money together. And they took him and they dropped him off at the train station. But they neglected to tell him, guess it was Amtrak or something, you also have to pay for the bags. So when he gets there, he doesn't have money to pay for the bags. So even though he had this big party and they sent him off, he wasn't going to be able to go there. He wasn't going to be able to go. But guess what happened to Howard Thurman that day? An African-American stranger, a man, didn't know him from a hole in a wall, said, what's going on, son? He was crying. He was in seventh grade. And he said, I have to go somewhere, but I can't afford the ticket. And you know what this man did? He took out his wallet and he paid for the ticket. This is Howard Thurman. This is what Marsh is based on. This is Howard Thurman in seventh grade, and a stranger, Samaritan-like, just helped him and connected to him. And that experience of Howard Thurman influenced him deeply, but it also influenced Dr. King, his greatest student. We only need to listen to the powerful words of Dr. King, and here are the quotes, and I'm going to rattle them off. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are we going to do for others? Everybody can be great because anybody can what? They can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree. You only need to have a heart full of grace. Kids, don't listen to the subject and the verb. You need to have the subject and the verbs right. Well, that's a different story. Or our lives begin and end the day we become silent about things that matter. That's John Stuart Mill. We all have to stand up and try and do what's right. And then King actually has a quote on the particular passage. And he says, the first question which the priest and the Levite ask is, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? But the Good Samaritan reversed the question and said, if I don't stop to help him, what's going to happen to him? And the stranger that helped Thurman, he was like the Samaritan. But that's just love. And I know how many people's lives could be changed with a little bit of love and a little bit of connection. I mentioned a gentleman that I met that had served so much time in prison. What if someone would have just reached out to him? His life could have been different. And that's a tragedy. It was a tragedy then and it's a tragedy now. And I think, as my grandmother said, tomorrow's not promised. And I think after going through the pandemic and us seeing that every day is a precious day, I think we should take the time with those days to try and help each other. Because I think that's what we're put here for. The money's on the side. Success is wonderful. I know we read all that stuff I did, which I didn't think you should have read it, but that's okay. We read all that, but that's not important.
But what's important is us helping each other. Like, if there's anything to take away from my challenge to myself and to everyone, is to try and help each other, because that's all it's about. And I know some will say, and I'll say, I was even nervous earlier today, I can't do it. You know, that's for Dr. King, that's for Howard Thurman, that's for, you know, great people. I'm just a regular person. But that's that, those hounds of fear, deception, and hate that Howard Thurman talked about. I think people who have done things, they do things precisely because they're human. And I think that's what makes it great, because we all have our own internal challenges, but yet we still push through. There have been so many good people in my life. I'm sure there's been so many good people in everyone's life. Little angels that just come and help you when you need it most. That's God. That's the music. That's God. They always show up at the right time. You never know them, and they just help you, and they push you along. And we just have the faith to believe. And I'm going to end my sermon on a quote for Dr. King about faith. Faith is simply taking the first step when you cannot see the whole staircase. And I think that's wonderful. So in 2023, let's take the first step of faith. Let's try and help each other. Let's continue to love each other. Thank you.